Whether you're a lover of literature or an analyst of Asian cinema, a dog person or a cat person, a good newsstand will have something for you. Join us then as we browse the shelves from Seoul to New York City today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Coming up a little later, we'll take a dip into the world of Asian cinema with Nang magazine.
The guest editors of this issue did a great job in a sense of exploring scars and death through cinema and cinema through scars and death, actual scars or mental scars and actual death or death on screen.
First, however, a pick from our gallery of favourite weekly titles around the world. Today we're heading to the United States for a word with Gail Bickler, design director for the New York Times Magazine. She talks about their upcoming health issue with a two-cover choice, allowing you to decide whether you're more of a dog person or a cat person.
We did a health issue, and it's about what animals are teaching us about human health. So we thought we'd have a little fun with the cover, and we did a split run, one for dog lovers and one for cat lovers, and it's basically both animals dressed up as physicians.
I haven't seen the cat one, actually.
You haven't? Yeah, it's pretty great. The cat's really fluffy, and he looks very concerned.
Were you there at the shoot? Did they behave themselves, the dog and the cat?
You know, it's funny. Normally, we would go on a shoot like this. Jessica Walsh of Sagmeister & Walsh shot it, and her studio is a bit small. And it's probably nice for the animals also to not have as many people involved. So I can't really say how they behaved, but the photos turned out great.
Yeah, especially the dog. He looks very well behaved, I have to say. So tell us a bit more. So, okay, this is the health issue. I've noticed this with the New York Times Magazine. I think every in the year, you do have a few issues that will come out every year, no matter what. I believe you have a travel one. Remind me the ones you have.
Actually, a large number of them are repeat issues. New York, yeah, we have a Voyages issue. There's a written one and also one that is photographic. The health issue, the money issue, I could go on. We do a music issue. But the variance really comes in the sub-themes. So, for example, with this health issue, you know, we focused on animals, which actually gives it a very different bent from many of the other health issues that we've produced and also made it quite a lot easier in terms of visuals. But, yeah, there is a kind of consistency in terms of what we produce in terms of our special issues.
And, you know, there's a tagline saying how the animals are helping the human health as well. So I was wondering, what's exactly the connection? I know probably you might not know the inner details, but what is the main story there?
Well, it's basically just different ways that people are looking at animals, both studying them and also observing, you know, studying like sometimes gene mutations in animals or their behavior in terms of self-medicating and that kind of thing, and kind of drawing conclusions from that in terms of what humans can learn from that. For example, there's a story about studying mutation in obesity-prone dogs and what that might reveal about risk factors for human obesity, and also what that might indicate in terms of new drug cures or treatments. There is another story that is a pretty interesting one about chimps. And how they're self-medicating, and basically how they're using like leaves and other natural substances to cure their ailments. And it talks a little bit about how all different kinds of animals do this, and how, in a way, they're practicing science and medicine, and they're making observations. And it's a kind of self-selecting situation where, obviously, if they chew the wrong thing that has poison in it, you know, they don't survive. So in a way, it's a very pure form of science. They're not, you know, coming away with any grand theories about, you know, what actually works. It's just truly what works that ends up prevailing in terms of the way they're treating themselves. So there's some really interesting stories in it. There's also another story by Hanya Yanagihara, who's the new editor of Tea. And it's a story about her parents who live in Honolulu and have a pet tortoise. And the story is about how tortoises basically are meant to live, I guess the average lifespan is around 150 years. And their pet tortoise is about 15 years old. So the piece is a lot about taking care of this like pet, which is essentially a pet that doesn't give a lot back. You can't really cuddle up with it. But how taking care of this this tortoise reminds them of their own mortality and what that means, because the tortoise will obviously most likely outlive both her parents and Hanya herself.
Wow, that's a fascinating story. I would love to read that, actually. Gail, I mean, moving on from the magazine, I must ask you, you know, I know we spoke, a few months ago, but since the election of Trump, how is it to be working at the New York Times? Did something change in the atmosphere, or you didn't feel that much, perhaps, in the magazine, which, you know, is not as overly political as, you know, perhaps the politics pages and everything?
Things definitely have changed, and I think a lot of it has to do with the pace of the news. And I think that probably is most acutely felt at the newspaper. That is definitely most acutely felt there, but we also feel the effects of it as well and are trying to publish, you know, more timely stories about things happening in politics as well. So it's a lot about the pace, and also I think interest has shifted. We're definitely publishing more political stories or things related to politics in some form, far more than we have in the past. I think it's just people are very politically involved right now.
Gail Bickler there from the New York Times Magazine. Next, we head for the world of art and literature titles, which has such a long and prestigious history, giving light to some of the most celebrated names in publishing, but it can be a daunting sector to crack. From its early beginnings in Paris, however, one Belgian magazine is taking the plunge, and it's called Oost. Co-founder Josephine Van Beek joins me now in the studio. It's called something like that, Josephine, isn't it? You'll forgive my attempts at pronunciation. I gave it a go, at least. Tell us a little bit about the sort of the origin story of the magazine, because I'm fortunate enough to have all 9 copies here before me. And the sort of subhead is an exhibition on paper. And they're little works of art, each and every one. I guess you probably wanted to do that when you set out, to make sure that each one, if it was going to convey knowledge about art, was itself an art treasure to behold.
The origin story is more or less, I was in Paris for 2 weeks with a group of Belgian and Dutch people who were journalists, writers, radio makers. And this is where I met the other co-founder, Frederik Willem-Dam. He wanted to write, but he hadn't written anything much at that point. But the Dutch people who were there, they had started some initiatives. There's actually, I brought one magazine. This is important in the origin story of Oost. This is called Das Magazin. It's a Dutch literary magazine. Mm-hmm. And the co-founder of this magazine was there. And he was younger than us. And then there was somebody else who had just
started. There's always someone like that, isn't there? A younger upstart who's already done it all and knows how to do it.
And I had been working as a freelance journalist for about 8 or 9 years at that point. And Frederik was a lot younger than me and just started out, but he had a free mind or something. So after the 2 weeks, he said, let's start a magazine. And at first I thought he was crazy, but then I really started thinking about it. And I thought it was a good idea because I had been writing about literature and art for the national newspaper, but there were a lot of things that I was not able to do in my regular job. I don't know, we started talking about making the magazine, and it turned out we liked the same artists. He was also, so it's a magazine about art, literature, and movies, and those are our 3 biggest interests. I think the main point is it's not about what's relevant now, but what is relevant to you personally.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this because it's interesting in terms of the editorial approach. I often ask the editors and publishers of magazines, oh, well, you know, what's the editorial cycle like? What are the editorial news meetings like? And there's a real commitment not to be, as you said, beholden to what's happening now. But presumably, there's such a huge sweep then that's available to you and your contributors. How on earth do you get started? I mean, that's an editorial meeting that would go on forever, isn't it? How does the kind of structure then, or does it all just rather fall into place a bit organically?
Yeah, think every magazine has more or less 2 interviews, 2 longer essays, a shorter essay, 2 pieces of fiction, and then some, I don't know what the name is in English, but the things that come back every time, like an essay of images. And so we need to fill in those things. And for this, we ask people we think are very good writers. And so Frederik is mostly in charge of the fiction part. Mm-hmm. at this point, he has written a book. He has won the debut prize with it, and now he's working on a novel. And I'm more in charge of the nonfiction part. So we ask people who are good writers.
Which is always a good starting point.
Yes.
And what do they make of it, though? Because presumably then they get quite a open sort of brief.
Yeah.
I imagine as a freelance writer, you must think, this is the best commission I've ever got. I can kind of do whatever I want. Is that the reaction you generally get?
Mostly, yes, because we ask someone to do an interview or to write an essay. And our question basically is there a subject that has to do with art, literature and or movies that you feel engaged with and have been thinking about, but you can't write it for another magazine or newspaper? And then mostly the answer is yes. And
I've got loads of ideas like that, probably, yeah. And so once that all begins to take shape, I mean, I mentioned that it looks like a work of art. Is there a sort of a coherence that you're going for? Is there a look? Is there a feel to the magazine? Or do you both and everyone involved, do you love the fact that there's a kind of a surprise in every edition or almost on every next page?
Yeah, there are a lot of surprises because the same open question that we ask our writers, it's actually the same for our illustrator. So each issue is illustrated by one person entirely. So this is why every magazine looks, on the one hand, completely different, but still our graphic designer stays the same. So I hope you can recognize these are all definitely Oogst magazines, but they look different every time. Yeah.
I think that's the most arresting thing, actually. As I said, I've got the whole pile of magazines here, and when you leaf through them, they are exactly as you describe it. They're identifiably the same, and yet very, 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 very different. What about then the balance of, I don't know what you'd call it, the sort of narrative? You mentioned you have that same basic structure. Do you look for a, I don't know what you'd call it, a stylistic approach from your writers, or it's just done on your gut instinct, the things that you like, writers you admire? Do they ever say, well, what should be my tone or what's my approach? So they ask you those kind of questions.
Yeah, sometimes if they think about it really well, they do, but it's a difficult question. I think a lot is possible. We always ask to write an accessible text, but that doesn't mean that it has to be simple. You can talk about difficult ideas. You just have to explain them well so everybody can understand it.
Easier said than done, though, that can be for some.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, especially when you write about art, which is also one of the reasons we really wanted to start a magazine, because I feel in the Dutch market it was missing. Either in the newspaper it was really simple and it was just like a review, it's good or bad, or it was very hermetic and it was placed in context, philosophers, art history. And we thought, no, art is about what you experience when you look at a work of art, and we want to try to bring that into print. So that was the idea, not only visual arts but also literature. And so that was the point. But the style it depends. We give a lot of freedom to our authors.
Well, and I'd say the only frustration for me as I was browsing through all of these beautiful editions was that I couldn't read the text. And I was joking with a colleague that I can sort of make sense of the odd word here and there with my, frankly, rather basic English and very, very limited German. What about that? Presumably, this is a conversation you've had before. People said, well, come on, when are you doing an English edition or a German edition or both or more? Is that something that fans maybe can look forward to in the future?
Well, maybe. In the beginning, my answer was always this, that I feel the quality of the text is very, very important. And we appear 4 times a year, so we have the time to work very hard on the text. We give authors feedback, they rewrite again. So it's really important that the texts are very good. And my English just isn't good enough to be able to do that.
No, it sounds like it would be fine. But I guess, no, there's a huge extra layer then of logistics and admin and publishing complexity, which would be a challenge.
This was my answer like a year ago, even, yeah. But now I'm not too sure because...
Okay, so that's promising. That's promising for me. That's good.
We are thinking about maybe making a best of and finding a really good translator and... So that might be a plan.
Okay, so there's hope there. Jasmin, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, now you mentioned Das Magazin there, which was a sort of an early, I don't know, an inspiration or a prompt to look more at this space and your own brilliant title. It's interesting, you know, I often talk to people who are running magazines and there's a bit more of a holistic approach. So there's an understanding that, yes, the magazine needs to have great writing, but it needs to be beautiful, maybe you need to do events or a festival, and you can tie all these strands together. And maybe the enlightened publisher of today and the future needs to be a bit more thoughtful about those elements. What about that? What about a kind of wider thing? Is there a world around the magazine that could come to life even more than at the moment for you, do you think?
Yes, we're trying to do that. The first year we launched every magazine, and we were trying to find an interesting way to do that. And this year, for the first time, we have we work together with a cinema in Antwerp. So every magazine is launched, but the focus is not on the magazine. It's a night with three guests who are part of our universe, not necessarily in the magazine, but people who fit our world. And they choose one movie to talk about, and then afterwards the audience can vote, and the movie with the biggest amount of votes will be
played. And presumably, I imagine if amongst your readership, then they must love that kind of thing, and I guess that helps to build a broader sort of loyalty to the brand, if you like. It's you don't want to almost talk about it in those terms, but let's just talk about a couple of the other magazines that you have with you. What's this? You got a slightly larger format magazine.
Yeah,
Tell us about this one.
Yeah, this is a magazine about design and fashion, and it's also beautifully done. It's I buy a lot of magazines which I find beautiful, but I don't really read about design and fashion, so it's more something that I browse through. And this one is an older one. This one is from 2013, the period we were working behind the screen to make our magazine.
Well, that's interesting. Was this about finding design inspiration?
Yes.
Layout,
yes.
Things, graphic flourishes that you liked. Was it a question of sort of trying to not emulate magazines, but borrow little bits from here and there? That must have been quite a fun process, presumably.
Yeah, it was very, very fun to do. So we just bought a lot of magazines and put post-its in it and talked with our graphic designer, and then we said, okay, we like this about that magazine. We don't want glossy paper. We want a bit like this from Gentlewoman, this from The Quintessence is the name of this magazine. Yeah, there's always something you like and something you don't like, but that's the good thing about making your own magazine. You can just mix and match and make...
Well, one thing just to bring it back to your magazine, one thing that struck me actually was you can see the journey the magazine's been on, but it's quite striking that there was a lot of obviously confidence from issue one, and actually it's been pretty consistent throughout, which is unusual because I think often when magazines start, issue two is wildly different from issue one, issue three is changed, there's always format changes, but it's pretty consistent, which suggests, I would say rather unusually, that you managed to get it right almost from the beginning. Was there a bit of serendipity, a bit of luck with that, or you just stuck with what you knew you liked and went with it?
I think the main reason is on the first issue we worked a year and a half, so that's
a fair amount of time. Isn't
it? So when the first issue came out, we knew what we wanted. So it was a bit exciting. We didn't really know. Okay, so we worked for a year and a half on the first one, and now in 3 months we have to make the second one. But
that moment of realization is always quite.
But once you have the grid, I think that the biggest changes are still between issue one and two. There are some visual things that changed but that were very good, but we kept. But yeah, I think it's just because we worked very long before we published our first magazine.
Fantastic. Well, look, we're almost at the end. I wanted to ask you, volume 10 is on the way. It's not been printed yet, is that right? Can you let our listeners know some of the things that maybe they have to look forward to? You don't have to give away any big secrets, but maybe whet the appetite? Or do they just have to wait and see?
Maybe one thing, in every issue we have an image essay with photographs, and this time we have photographs of Frank Horvat, who is quite a famous photographer, and I went to Paris in his studio and we picked some photographs together from the beginning of his career, which is beginning of last century, and then the middle 80s in New York color photography. And then an image at the end, which is fairly recent, a digital one. So that's one thing.
Well, that's very exciting.
And you don't need to know Dutch to...
this is the great thing. This is a great thing about visual art, of course, is it brings us all together. Josephine, brilliant to speak with you. Thanks so much for coming to see us. That's Josephine van Beek from Eerst magazine. Thanks to her. This is The Stack. We're off to the movies next. You're listening to The Stack. Now, to end the show, we look at the world of cinema, more specifically, Asian cinema. Davide Cazzaro launched Nang last year, a magazine dedicated to cinema in Asia, and the second edition is out on good newsstands now. Instead of dedicating each issue to a specific country, the decision was made to choose various themes, the latest being scars and death. Davide explained the process of capturing the beauty of cinema on the page to Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco.
Davide, pleasure to have you here in our studio here in London. Tell us about this new issue. What is the theme of it?
Well, first of all, a pleasure being here at the studio. Yes, it's issue number two, and it deals with a quite challenging, in a sense, theme, scars and death. You rarely, I think, see a whole magazine dedicated to such themes. These are two words that, having them on the cover, I do not take lightly as the publisher of the magazine. Often they're associated as also, in a sense, to catchy or mercantilist, in a sense, agenda. But I think the editors, the guest editors of this issue did a great job in a sense of exploring scars and death through cinema and cinema through scars and death, actual scars or mental scars and actual death or death on screen. So multi-directions in a sense.
Before we talk more about this issue in specific, tell us a bit more about the idea for the magazine, which is, for those who know, Nang, you know, is kind of a project, a 10-issue magazine about cinema in Asia. And of course, it's biannual, so you're still in issue two, so you still have a couple of years ahead with the project. Yeah. So tell us, when did it all started?
It started basically last year, about 12 years ago, with this pilot issue zero, which does not count in the 10, so there will be 10 full issues. And the idea was having a high-quality print magazine, print-only magazine, entirely dedicated to cinema in Asia. Too often, I found cinema in Asia was treated a bit as a curiosity, or it was the center of short focuses on other magazines. Having something that digs deep on specific themes related to cinema in Asia was something that was not out there, and particularly in print. And particularly, one of the key characteristics is each issue is guest edited. So it's almost, in a sense, rethought from scratch. The editors and also the designers are encouraged to kind of rebuild the given issue around the theme. So there's an element, a strong element of kind of shape-shifting within the project, and a strong collaborative element as well, because it's a magazine that many, many different people and contributors do every time.
Tell us a bit about the behind the scenes of making this magazine, because, you know, first of all, you're based in Seoul, so we have to say that most of the things, I believe, you do it from there. I have a few curiosities. What's the print run of Nang? Who are your customers? Are they South Korean, or is quite international? Tell us a bit more.
Sure. It's really an international project on many levels. It's done indeed from Korea, in a sense. The designers, Shin Dong-hyuk and Shin Hae-ok, Koreans, and I'm based there, as you mentioned. But we actually print in Sweden. We wanted to achieve a high-quality print result, so we print with an advanced offset technique, stochastic printing, and with very high-quality production specs. And then from Sweden, the print run is a limited print run, a one-off print run, so the idea is also each issue wants to be a bit of as an event almost. Once it's gone, it's gone. It's 1,500 copies. And from Sweden is then dispatched to a couple of fulfillment companies, one in the UK, one in Germany, and then it's dispatched either to stockists. We have about, at the moment, 15, 18 international stockists in different parts of the world, and all directly available to the website.
You did mention that, you know, the high quality, that's why you're printing in Sweden. I think, you know, it was a very wise decision because, you know, the quality of the paper is amazing. As soon as you open, I love that there's a bookmark as well, or a magazine mark, shall we say.
Magazine mark, yes.
It is quite nice. So tell us about which type of stories you featured in the magazine. I'm becoming a big fan of South Korean cinema. Maybe I'm arriving a bit late to that, but you told me there's a story with a director that was dealing with death. Tell us a bit more.
Sure. In general, overall, the magazine, as a cinema magazine, it wants also to kind of try and rethink the form of a cinema magazine. So each issue does not contain any news, reviews, or report. Each issue wants to be timeless and kind of delving in depth around the theme, on the theme, rather than moving here and there. This issue, too, it's, a really unique collection of different approaches and stories. One indeed contribution by one of the two guest editors, who is Korean, Mr. Yoo Eun Song, delved into, kind of took the recent death of an independent filmmaker in Korea as a kind of starting point to delve into independent filmmaking in Korea, the leftist movement of the film club in the 70s and 80s that existed during the dictatorship era. So quite, I would say, lesser known aspect or some of the roots, actually, of contemporary Korean cinema, of course, that they were built there. But in general, this issue has also very personal writings by a number of filmmakers. I really love the fact that not only editors and professional critics are involved, but also filmmakers themselves. So you have very different kinds of writing, and in this particular issue, given that it deals with very profound and deep kind of personal themes like scars and death, I was really proud to see that filmmakers, in a sense, opened up and shared with the readers very unique and sometimes personal stories.
Which Asian countries do you think are doing extremely well when it comes to cinema? What are the star countries at the moment, like with, you know, with high production value films and etc.?
Of course, Korea, as you mentioned, has emerged for a number of years and it's surely doing greatly. A lot is coming from Southeast Asia these days with very interesting directors and voices, which in the past the industry, in the respective industries in the country, did not have either the means or the freedom. There was more censorship, etc. So a lot is happening in several Asian countries. It would be also unfair to kind of single out just one specific country in a sense. And that, in my view, is also the reason for a magazine entirely dedicated to this region, not to mention, for instance, say, India or other parts. There's so much to explore and to celebrate as well. Nang was born also as a platform to know more, in order to know more, to enjoy and to kind of discover more. But in depth, once again, not in the sense of overall view here and there. And talking about nations, I take pride by the fact that we do not classify pieces by nations, or we do not, of course, try to be comprehensive. It would be kind of unachievable anyway. So once again, the theme works as a sense as a kind of constellation that kind of orients the issue. So we do not have any specific boxes to fill or not fill. And that is also thanks to the kind of independence of the project allows this kind of freedom. Then the independence of the project has also, of course, brings with it some difficulties, but surely in terms of editorial freedom, that is one of the main strengths.
Davide Cazzaro from Nang, a magazine on Asian cinema, in conversation with the Stack's own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. And that is all we have time for on this week's programme. My thanks to our producers, Ben Ryland and Fernando, and as ever behind the glass, our editor, Claire Urban. If you'd like to get in touch, then write to Fernando. He's on fp@monocle.com. You can listen to the show at the same time next week. Or if you're going to miss us before then, delve into the archive at monocle.com or via iTunes. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you very much for listening.